The talk you're about to listen to is a presentation of Penn State Crew. To find out more about Penn State Crew, or to find more talks, music, and videos, check out PennStateCrew.org.
So how are you guys? Doing all right? Merry Christmas. It's almost here. One year, Kelly and I were at home. This is years and years ago, and it was like October. And our son, Benjamin, was up in his room in the kind of a back of our apartment, and he was yelling, "It's coming! It's coming! It's coming!" And we were running like, "Ben, what? Christmas, Daddy." It was like October. So it's coming. It's almost here. Well, it's been a kind of a heavy-hearted time around here lately. And so we thought it might be fun to take some time here and to celebrate Christmas together and to kind of move on to a little bit easier things to think about than what we've been talking about lately. And so we're going to talk about Christmas. And in particular, we're going to look at Matthew chapter 2. If you're familiar with Matthew 2, you know that it's about the Magi, the Messiah, and his mysterious star. And so we're going to take some time. We're going to work through this together. I want to show you what I think the Magi saw. We've got pretty good reason to have a pretty good idea of what they saw that night or those many nights. And so what we're going to do is we're going to put up on the screen all the stars in the sky. I'm going to explain to you how that works. We'll kind of work through that together and then try to see what it is that they saw as we kind of enter into this Christmas season together. So if you could, I'd appreciate it if you would stand with me in honor of God's word as I read it to you. We're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. It says this: "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, 'Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him.' When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. 'In Bethlehem, in Judea,' they replied, 'for this is what the prophet has written: But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him.' After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh." Go ahead and have a seat. Throughout history, the church has wondered, what was this? What happened this night or this series of nights? What was the star? Was it natural? Was it a literal star? Was it supernatural? Was it an angel, you know, a light-up, glow-in-the-dark neon angel? Was it, and if it was natural, was it a comet or a, what happened this night? And so for centuries, people have wondered really what was going on. And in any case, is astrology even compatible with Christianity? So like what is this all, what happened here? What's it all about? And so we're going to try to answer all those questions tonight and work through it. And I'll tell you here what we're going to do, four things. First, we're going to differentiate between astrology and observing God-given signs. Okay, we're going to differentiate there. Then we're going to discover what I think the Magi saw. Then we're going to try to decipher the message behind what they saw. And then finally, we're going to just dwell for a few minutes together on the implications of all that we're going to learn tonight. Okay, so we're going to differentiate, discover, decipher, dwell. And to give credit where credit is due, a large portion of what I'll be kind of talking with you tonight about, I learned at a website, BethlehemStar.net. So if this stuff intrigues you and you want to learn more and kind of dig in a little bit deeper, BethlehemStar.net will be a great place for you to go and to kind of check that out. All right? Let's start, though, by differentiating between astrology and observing God-given signs. Astrology is defined as the study that assumes and attempts to interpret the influence, that's your key word, the influence of the heavenly bodies on human affairs. So if you are interested in horoscopes and astrology and all that kind of stuff, as I just defined it, I want to warn you, I don't think that's a real good idea, okay? In fact, the Bible strongly condemns astrology in all of those senses. And so I don't want to say anything tonight to suggest to you that horoscopes and astrology and all that stuff are good or helpful. In fact, when the Bible, I'll give you a couple different places where we can see what the Bible says about stars. In Deuteronomy 4:19, it says this: "When you look up to the sky and you see the sun and the moon and the stars and all the heavenly array, do not be enticed into bowing down to them and worshiping." All right? Guys, the only thing in heaven that directs your life, that blesses you, that influences you, that is sovereign over the affairs of men and nations, is God. And to attribute that influence to stars is to give them the credit that only God is due. It is, in effect, to worship them, and that is forbidden. The stars do not love you. They have no power, so don't look to them for comfort or direction. And I'll tell you, it does not matter a whit the placement of the stars in the sky on the day of your birth. Okay? They have no influence, so don't worship them. What we're looking at tonight is something altogether different from influence. The Magi believed that God created the stars, and not only the stars, but the constellations, and that he can arrange them as signs for us. He put them in their places. And in that, I think the Magi and the Bible are actually in agreement. The Bible teaches that God didn't just create the stars, but that he placed them in specific locations. He ordered the constellations. Job 9:9, for instance, says that God is the maker of the Bear and Orion, the Pleiades, and the constellations of the south. You guys know what's the Bear? You know what the Bear is? Yeah, Ursa Major, right? Big Dipper. That's that. Orion, you recognize Orion? Comes up. It's always bad news because it means it's winter, right? Rises kind of in the east, southeast, kind of comes up. It's real, probably the brightest constellation in the wintertime, real easy to see. And God made those. He put them there. The Bible suggests in a number of places that God may speak to us through the stars. They have no influence, but he can use them as signs, as indicators of something. Psalm 19 says this: "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world." Luke 21, Jesus was speaking there, and he says this, speaking about his return, he said, "There will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars." And then, of course, there's Matthew 2 itself, our passage with the Magi. The Magi saw something in the stars that they believed was a message from God. Either they got crazy lucky in attributing meaning to what was, in fact, just gibberish nonsense, or they were right, and that God meant to communicate to them through these stars. So what we're going to do is we're going to discover what they saw, we're going to try to decipher what they meant, and then we're going to dwell together on what it might mean for us. All right? Now, the Magi knew a lot about stars. They studied them. They believed that there might be meaning and signs from God in all of that, in the way they interacted. And one night, or more likely, over a series of many nights, they saw something. They saw things. They saw signs in the sky, signs in the stars, that were so stunning to them that they were compelled to go on a very long journey. They saw something that was worth packing and going far from home because of what they saw. Our job tonight is to try to reverse engineer it, to try to go back and figure out what did they see? Based on what we know out of Matthew chapter 2, what did they see? What happened? And I think the best hint there in Matthew 2 comes in verse 2. Matthew 2, 2. Listen to this. It says, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." Okay? So apparently, whatever they saw told them something about Israel, right? Something about the Jews, something about kingship, and something about birth. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back and see what the sky looked like and see if we can't figure out kingship, Israel, birth. How did these things come together? What did they see that compelled them to go on this big, long journey? Okay? Now, as we do it, you need to understand a little bit about just kind of the basics of observational astronomy. Jeremy, am I pinned in here, bro? Can I walk around? Can you trace me? We're just free? All right, good. Okay, so basics of astronomy. So here's the sun, right? Big yellow one is the sun. And here's the earth, right? And what's going to happen is the earth's spinning around the sun. You're looking out into space. It'd be easier this way. If the sun's right here, okay, and the earth's here, and my face is like North America. Is that a problem? Well, I'm North America. It's nighttime, right? And when we spin around here, now it's daytime, right? That's obvious. So what's going on is you can see the stars over here in the daytime. In the nighttime in the winter. And if you want to see those stars and you turn around, you're not going to see them because the sun's in the way. You got to wait till the earth travels all the way around here. And then you can see, whatever I didn't say, the summer sky there, the winter sky there, right? The thing is, night or over the course of any given night, the stars themselves aren't changing at all. They're all fixed. They're all in a stuck pattern, essentially. And we're just panning across it. So hour to hour through the night, we're moving, but there's nothing dynamic taking place. And then the next night, we're seeing this kind of chunk of it. And then the next night, this chunk. And then by the wintertime, you know, or by the end of the other 6 months, we're over here and we're seeing this. And so what we see every night changes, but the actual pattern doesn't change at all. The Big Dipper is always the Big Dipper. Pleiades is always Pleiades. Orion's always Orion. The distance from Betelgeuse in Orion to like Castor and Pollux in Gemini, it's like the same distance. Nothing changes, okay? It's boring. Nothing's happening there. It's all stuck in place, right? Okay, what that means then is whatever they saw in the stars, it can't have been simply the stars because the stars don't really change. And if they saw it tonight, like the stars tonight, what it is right now, if you walk outside and look at the sky, take a picture right now, whatever time this is, 12 months exactly, go back outside, it's going to be precisely the same again. A little bit different tomorrow night, a little bit different the next night. But by the time the earth travels around the sun and gets back to this exact spot in 12 months, it's going to be exactly the same. Okay? If they saw something extraordinary tonight, then it's going to be extraordinary a year from now. It's going to be extraordinary 100 years from now. It was extraordinary 1,000 years ago. That can't be all that they saw. Okay? Make sense? Good news is there's more to the story. Because there's this band of the sky, this particular kind of stripe that runs across the sky where the stars don't follow the rules, where they do move, where the distances are not the same, where they wander. They'll go up. They'll go faster. They'll cut through the constellations and then stop and then turn around and go back, okay? And they used to call them the wandering stars. What do we call them today? No, that's a good guess. Okay, the Milky Way is actually going to be pretty fixed too. What do you call wandering stars? Planets. They are the planets, okay? And what this is, this band of the sky, which there is a Milky Way band in the sky, but the band in the sky where the stars cheat is essentially, it's the plane of the solar system, right? So if we're back here, and here's the sun, and here's like, you know, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and all on that line, it's all in a disk. It's all in a plane. And so if you're sitting here and you're looking out the disk, there is a fixed background out there of all these constellations through which you're going to look, you're looking at the edge of the solar system, and you're seeing, you know, Leo and Virgo and Capricorn and, I don't know, what else are they? Gemini, all right? You're seeing all these things out here on this plane. You with me? You got it? Okay. That, by the way, is what the zodiac is. The zodiac is significant, not because there's some liar in the back room of some newspaper writing out ambiguous predictions, okay? That's of no consequence. The reason the zodiac matters, it's the plane, it defines the plane of the solar system. And so when you're here on Earth and you look out at Jupiter or Mars or Venus, which is kind of hard to see often because it's inside the loop and the sun gets in the way, when you're looking out there, you're looking at the edge and you're seeing the zodiac out behind, okay? So if you're Magi and you're watching the sky, you're pretty much not looking anywhere except across this band. Because if anything interesting whatsoever is going to happen, it's going to happen there along the band of the zodiac. That's where the sun rises and sets, and that's where all the planets are. You with me? You got a map in your head of this? Okay. So, you know that. Here's the thing. We've known that for a long, long time, right? For hundreds of years, thousands probably. We've known, okay, this is where stuff is. They didn't used to know how it all worked out, but that's how we learned even that there were planets, because there were these stars that like didn't make sense to anybody. It wasn't really until 1609 that Kepler kind of cracked the code and figured out all that's going on there and kind of how the orbits work and all things heliocentric universe, or not universe, heliocentric solar system and all that stuff. As all that stuff kind of got worked out, the combination of that, Kepler's math, and then computers today, we can dial in exactly what the sky looks like. Now, for $5, you can get a little piece of cardboard and you can see like the stars themselves. Just dial it in. This is what it looks like right now. It'll be the same thing in 12 months. But because of computers, we can throw into it everything. I mean, all of it. We know exactly how all the comets travel. We know all this kind of stuff. It's incredible. And so we can dial up. We can choose any place, basically in the galaxy, and say that if I were standing right here and looking this direction at this time of night, what would the sky look like? And we can do that. And because of that, we can go back and look at the sky in the region of time that the Magi would have gone on their trip, and we can see what they saw and look for something that sure seems like the king of the Jews has been born. So far, so good? That's what we're going to do. We're going to use a program. I love this program. It's called Starry Night. And we're gonna dial it up here, and I'm going to show you what's going on. So, we live here, my friend? It's Tyler. All right, here's the world. Or here's the sky, in any case. And what we're going to do is we're going to start August of 3 BC in Babylon. The Magi would have been from Babylon. And so if you look here, it's August of 3 BC. We're in Baghdad, which is, for all intents and purposes, that's Babylon. All right? Here's where we are. Now, the sky is big, and all of history is a very long time, so we're going to narrow the search. We're in Babylon, and we're going to look out. We know that Herod died around 1 BC, and we know that Jesus was born shortly before Herod's death. And so we're going to start here in 3 BC, plus I've already looked all this up. But that's how you would do it, right? You figure it out, and we're working it back. I'm going to show you what they saw. We're going to discover what they saw, and then I'll help you decipher each bit of the message as you move along, okay? All right, now this here in the center, our hero right now is Jupiter, right there. You got that? All those words don't help you. Jupiter, and we're going to track Jupiter. Jupiter has long been known as the king planet. It's just huge. It's 90,000 miles in diameter. Okay, Earth is big. It's 8,000 miles in diameter. This thing is just gigantic, and it has long been understood to be the king. You may know who Jupiter was named after. Jupiter, right? If you name something after someone, it's named the thing that you named it after, okay? It's named after Jupiter. Jupiter is the king in the Roman pantheon of gods. Now, if we switch from Roman to Greek, now who is it? Zeus, right? And we know the Greeks better than the Romans. It's the king. This is the king planet. It's huge, and it's understood to represent the king. Now, this star here that we're going to watch, right here, right there, that baby, that's called Regulus, okay? Regulus also means king. You might notice, you might hear the word regal in the word Regulus, same root. We call it Regulus. The Greeks called it Rex, which means king. The Babylonians called it Sharu. You want to guess what Sharu means? You guys are on, right? Okay. Honestly, I have no idea why. I mean, I don't know why that is, but it's been recognized to be the king star. It represents the king in multiple cultures. In particular, the Babylonians, the Romans, the ones with which we're most concerned, understood that to be the king. I want you to watch what happens. We can move forward day by day here. And as we do, I want you to watch Jupiter. Now, as we track around Jupiter, moment by moment, the king planet comes into conjunction with the king star. Right? Now, that's cool, but you don't go on a trip about that. Right? That's not so big of a deal. That's not kind of the end of the world. But you might kind of pay attention. The king comes into conjunction with the king. All right? Happens relatively often, but I want you to see what happens after that. So as it keeps going, I'm going to let it autoplay. It goes forward, stops, and turns around and comes back for a second conjunction with the king. Okay? This is less common. You might stop and pay attention. Wow, this is interesting. King has a conjunction with the king, and then it stops, goes back, does it again. Then watch what happens. We keep watching it. If we let it play out, it goes back, stops, comes back around again for the third time. That is basically unheard of. So if you're Magi and you're watching this band of the sky to see, is anything happening here, watching things, you see the king planet have a conjunction with the king star. Stop, do it again. Stop, do it again. Three times. Essentially what you're watching is you're watching Jupiter dance out a crown of coronation over the king star. King planet and the king star, conjunction, conjunction, conjunction. In all likelihood, this is what caught their attention. And it would explain why they began to think that the stars were giving a message about a king. Okay? But that's not it. Why the king of the Jews? This gets a little more speculative, but it's pretty safe, I think, to assume that the Babylonian Magi knew a fair bit about the Jewish Messiah. They would have known the prophecies. They actually were probably very well acquainted with all things about the Messiah of Israel. Why is that? Why would I make the claim that the Magi of all people would be well attuned to the prophecies of the Messiah? Daniel, that's right. Whoever said that is exactly right. About 550 years before this, Daniel, who was one of the greats in the history of Israel, became essentially a Magi. He was one of these royal advisors to the king, and he was absolutely extraordinary. By his godly life, by his just supreme excellence in everything he did, he rose to the heights of that kingdom. And twice, two times, two completely separate related events, the king of Babylon issued a decree in all the world, and they ruled the whole thing at the time, in all the world, that no one could worship any god apart from the God of Israel. Daniel's God would be their God. And it is altogether likely that Daniel left a deep mark, not just in that culture, but in that particular community of the Magi, of these royal advisors to the kings of Babylon. He left a mark, and they probably knew all too well the messianic prophecies. They probably knew Daniel's writings, and they probably knew Genesis chapter 49:9. If you have a Bible, you want to flip there. Genesis 49:9 is Jacob, the father of Israel, one of the fathers of Israel, giving a blessing to his sons. And when he speaks to his son Judah, listen to what he says to Judah. "You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down, like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his." Judah was being given the promise that the kings of Israel would come from his line. The ruler's scepter would not depart from them. They would be the kings. But they would hold the kingship temporarily, man after man after man, waiting for the real king to come. They were like the stewards of Gondor. They're going to hold the throne. They're going to hold the kingdom until the real king shows up. This passage, by the way, is why Jesus is sometimes called the Lion of Judah. There's a recognition of the kingliness of this, and that the lion is associated with this tribe. It is associated with the king, not just any king, but with the king of Israel. Okay? Now, take a look back here. What constellation is all this taking place in? Can you see that? It's in Leo, the lion. Okay? That probably took our Magi's breath away. They're watching this thing, this king and the king and the king, as the crown is dancing around. This crown of coronation is dancing, and it's all taking place right here in the constellation of the lion, hearkening back to the Lion of Judah who would come. As this kind of goes on, we've got kingship, and we've got the Jewish Messiah. Next thing we've got to figure out is birth. Does this thing going to tell them anything that the King of the Jews has been born? So watch what happens. We're going to do this a bit at a time. Watch kind of the lower right of the screen. Here's Jupiter. We're on the third conjunction now. And as it goes off, do you see what's racing in from the back, from the bottom corner? Do you see it? Boom. I'm going to back that up in case you missed it. Look in the bottom left, bottom right corner. Here we are at the conjunction, the third and final conjunction, and racing, just tearing ahead, bum, 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 is Venus. And right here on June 18th, we have a perfect conjunction of Venus and Jupiter. Now, anybody know what Venus represents? Love, excellent. Love, fertility, motherhood, all these things. And what we have now is that the king, in the midst of Leo, the lion, now has a perfect conjunction with the star that represents motherhood and love and fertility. Now, does anybody happen to know what's the brightest thing in the night sky? It is the moon. That's correct. Yes, it's the moon. By far. The moon just kills everything else. Besides the moon, what's the next brightest thing? You guys know? In the night sky. No, North Star is actually way down the list. North Star is small, no big deal. Do you guys know? It's Venus, yeah. And so what we've got here is Venus and Jupiter are numbers 2 and 3. This event here, you guys, June 18th, 2 BC, this is one of the brightest conjunctions in the history of time. And without question, it was far and away the brightest thing that the Magi would have ever seen in their lives. In all their years of watching the stars, this is the event. I've been told that this event, people that don't have any interest whatsoever in the Jewish Messiah, planetariums around the world show this particular event because it was so strikingly bright. These two stars, an absolute perfect conjunction. This is what they saw. And they've seen this coronation of the king, all of these things. They've seen it happening in Leo. They've seen the mother star come into the king. And I think this was the moment right here where they decided we've got to go on a journey. I think this final moment was what prompted them to ask the question, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? And so they pack, and they go on a trip. And by the way, what's interesting, that when the coronation begins here, when the king starts dancing, it's been 9 months from that moment to this. Now, I don't know if that's significant or not. It could be that Jesus was conceived when the king began to dance with the king, and he was born when the mother meets the king, when they come together. But whatever it is, I think this is the thing that compelled them to pack and to go on a journey. The mother planet and the king planet, following the triple conjunction of the king planet with the king star in the constellation of Leo, in all likelihood is what prompted them to go on this long journey. Okay? Now, you got to look at one more thing just to close the loop. If all of this is correct, and if Jupiter is in fact the thing that they saw that compelled them to go on this trip, then we need to really finish one last part of the story. Go back to Matthew 2, because there's a little bit more that's got to happen, that we've got to see if this fits. Go to Matthew 2, look at verse 3. Let me read this to you. Verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed. Okay, that reminds me. Actually, let me tell you this. Herod had to hear about this. People have wondered, okay, what was it? Was it a supernova? Was it some cataclysmic huge thing? The answer is it cannot have been some big, huge, crazy, dramatic thing, or Herod would have known about it. He wouldn't have had to hear about it. So the event that we're trying to figure out, that I think this is, had to be significant to people that were paying attention. But it had to be the kind of thing that to a lay person it would need to be explained. Okay? And this fits that. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. In Bethlehem, in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go, make a careful search for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. Now, he's lying, by the way. He's going to kill him, or wants to kill him. That's a different story. Verse 9, after they heard the king, they went on their way from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. Okay, now, it's odd to talk about a star being stopped, because whenever you look at them, they're stopped, right? And they move so incredibly slowly that it doesn't appear that they're moving at all. What do you call it when they are moving quickly? What's that called? Shooting star, yes, or a plane, right? One of the two. And this one is going to stop. So what does it mean to say that a star has stopped? You've seen it happen twice already tonight. When we say that a star has stopped, what we're saying is that it's gone into full, what's called full retrograde motion. When a star, like what we saw Jupiter do earlier, what it does, it goes and it slows down, stops, turns around, and goes back. And I think that when they say they saw the star stopped, for them, in the language of someone who watches the stars, that's really what you mean, because they're always, in any moment in time, they're always appear to be standing still. Now, that's lame looking. We are in Baghdad still, Babylon, 2 BC. We're going to do June 2 BC. We're going to move now, because they've left. They've gone on their journey, and they've gone to Jerusalem to meet with Herod. Well, they've gone to Jerusalem because that's where you might expect the king of the Jews to be. And instead, they speak to Herod. So we're going to move now to Jerusalem, and we're going to scoot forward just a couple months here to give them time to go on their trip. Now, there in the middle, what you'll see is Jupiter right here. And what we're about to watch is Jupiter is here in the constellation Virgo, and it's going to move down, Virgo's arm, down towards your armpit, stop, turn around, and go back. Okay? Should we pause? Okay. So we're going to just let time pass here. So watch Jupiter. There she is. She's coming down, slows down, stops, turns around, and starts working back up the arm. Okay? Let me reset that. Let you see it again. Jupiter's there. It's going to go down. It's cruising down. You see Venus taking off. It's got nowhere to go. It goes down, slows down, and stops right there before it's going to return. Now, this here is in the southern sky. So if we were in Jerusalem at, like, you know, at dawn, 5 in the morning, say, looking south from Jerusalem towards Bethlehem, what you would see is Jupiter in full retrograde motion. You would see Jupiter has stopped right there. And by the way, this is happening in Virgo. constellation that represents virginity. And this is weird. Check out the date. See that? Can you read that? It says December 25th, 2 BC. Now, I will tell you, in all sincerity, I think that's probably a coincidence. There's no biblical evidence that Jesus was born on December 25th. I mean, he may have been. I think he was born on June 18th, 2 BC. But he might have been. But isn't that weird? Isn't that just crazy? It would have been on December 25th that the star kind of entered full retrograde and stopped. It's also not at all sure that the Magi actually showed up the night that Jesus was born. They may have come sometime later because Herod had the babies killed. They were all 2 years old and younger. So it may have been, it took him a while to get there and he was casting a broad net. But you guys, nevertheless, that's weird, okay? This, I think, is what they saw. They saw the king planet do the triple conjunction with the king's star in the constellation of Leo, immediately followed by the conjunction of the king planet with the mother planet, followed by this thing coming into full stop in the southern sky over Bethlehem as they went to visit the one who had been born king of the Jews. Triple conjunction, followed by the conjunction with the mother planet, all within Leo, king of the Jews, had been born. Now, I think that's cool. I think that's all interesting, but I want to help you consider that's cool, but so what? What do we do with that? What are the implications for us? Guys, the earth spins and the planets move in a fixed pattern. There's no deviating from it. This exact series of events that we just saw here, all of it, the heralding, the birth of a king, it was set to occur at a very precise moment. God didn't just move the stars into place when he was ready. Okay, here, let's put them all into place. There was an exact sequence of events that preceded this. A long series of moments that preceded this. Days, weeks, months, years, centuries, millennia preceded this. All the while, the stars, planets, just kept doing their thing over and over and over. Which means that the size, the placement, the speed, the direction of every star and every planet in the universe was planned, choreographed, foreordained, all leading inexorably to this moment right here. What that means is that your salvation was planned the day that God flung the stars into space and that he flung them with great precision. It confirms the truth of Ephesians 1:4, that God chose us in Christ before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. It means that Jesus was not using hyperbole when in Matthew 25:34 he said, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world.'" It means that everything has been planned and that God is sovereign. Galatians 4 put it like this. One translation says, "In the fullness of time." NIV says, "When the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under law, to redeem those under law that we might receive the full rights of sons." The stars announced the birth of a child who was born to die, and they were set up on the day of creation. "For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord." Because Jesus is that Savior because he came to take the blame for everything you've ever done, to be your scapegoat, and to give you credit for his perfect life. And I hope that this Christmas, if you've not yet done so, you might bend your knee to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the very stars serve, and they proclaim his birth so that you may know his birth and his death was planned on the day of creation and accomplished for you in the fullness of time. And so with that, I wish you a Merry Christmas, that you might know this one who loves you. Set the stars in place. Let's pray together. Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry hosts one by one and calls them each by name because of his great power and his mighty strength. Not one of them is King Jesus, we worship you, we honor you, we fall before you. You have foreordained all this so that we might know you. And Lord, you did it before you created the world. You knew. You knew that we would fall, that we would rebel. You knew what it would cost to buy us back, and yet you did it anyway. And Lord, I pray for those here that don't yet know you, for those that are far from you. Lord, I pray that, I hope that they might see that if you would go to such great lengths, that you might be worth knowing. I pray that you might open their eyes to see how desperately they need you and your sufficiency to meet that need. I pray that they would come to love you and worship you and adore you. And I pray, Lord, that those who already do know you, that this Christmas they might praise you more, that they would grow deeper in their love for you, and they would strive to make you known. You are the best, sweetest thing. You are the King of Kings. And we love you. And we thank you that you love us. Amen.
The talk you have just listened to is a presentation of Penn State Crew. Crew is a community where the gospel captures hearts, transforms lives, and launches men and women into a lifelong adventure with Jesus Christ. To find out more about Penn State Crew, or to find more talks, music, and videos, check out PennStateCrew.org. That's PennStateCRU.org. This talk is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. You are free to copy and distribute this talk to others as long as you do not do it for commercial purposes or alter, transform, or build upon this talk in any way.